Good afternoon. We all want to know, what is a shower spa?
I wouldn't be under it. I only travel economy, and I always sit, as you know, in seat 50G, which is next to the lavatory.
Oh, is that your seat?
Yeah, I always sit at the very back because I've got easy access to the food cabinet.
In case you get a bit peckish on a long-haul flight.
I know we need to reintroduce the guest, but a brilliant question has come in from one of the listeners, from Katia, and I think I'd like us to pick up on that once you've reintroduced our guest.
Well, that's right. We're joined by Nadia Wepe, who has got her own company called Baby Arabia. Good afternoon to you, Nadia.
Hello.
And next to Nadia is Cyril Zammit, who is the Fair Director for Design Days Dubai. Cyril, welcome.
Hi, thank you.
And one of our listeners, Katia, says, Cyril, what language do you dream in?
It's complicated. Actually, last night I dreamed in English, but normally spontaneously in French.
Really?
Yes, not always. But last night was a mix. I had some friends, so I was talking in English, but also Italian, and suddenly it was a bit of Chinese, but I can't speak Chinese, so don't worry. But it was a very weird international dream last night. So
what about you, Nadia?
Definitely English. Absolutely, it's my mother tongue.
That's your mother tongue.
The only problem I have is when I switch from languages sometimes. So if I'm speaking a lot of Arabic or Spanish or English, especially from Spanish to Arabic, I'll find that I'll say an Arabic word in midst of a Spanish conversation or vice versa, which is very strange because people look at you like you're some warped person. But I don't dream that often either.
I mean, in terms of mixing languages, sometimes it's funny. When I lived in Switzerland in a German part, so I was speaking German almost all day, and suddenly I had a call from my mum, and I was speaking to her in French, and you got a silence for a while, and then so you realize, okay, I just said something she didn't get. So I said, okay, was that? She said, yeah, what language was that? Was that German or English? Yeah.
My dreams have been like silent movies. I'm not aware of
you're the artist.
Any conversation.
That's the artist.
Oh, that's what the
great
actors.
Film.
Yeah, but I'm not aware of conversations. I just kind of remember.
Not
maybe they're not ready to give me the word yet, because you know they say that you only dream when you're ready to get the images. Well, maybe there's another face to it. You only get the words when you're ready for those as well.
I don't know. It's a good way of putting it. Another message from one of our listeners. The same here. My son was not able to speak Arabic, even though we used to speak to him in Arabic. We were told that it is something to do with the brain. Is that correct? I don't know. Please note that we also speak another local language. Could this be the reason? I think it just takes time, doesn't it?
They say multilingual children are delayed in speaking. I know that also my four-year-old, he's just turned four, he will speak English first. If he wants something, he will ask for it in Arabic. He knows now. When he talks to his father, he will speak in Norwegian as much as he can. His vocabulary is less because he's got all these languages. So he has chosen English as his preferred, but he can talk the others, but he will choose when. And the vocabulary in the others is less.
Interesting.
He was later in speaking a little bit. But, you know, they do say some children just can't take more than one language. But what I've read most of the time, it's about consistency. So one parent speaks one language, the other parent speaks the other language, and they never mix it. So what happens is if you're speaking Arabic and English like I do all the time, it's very confusing for children. So I should only speak one. And then my husband never wavers from Norwegian, never. So Kai can actually move to Norwegian quite easily.
And what about when you're speaking together, you'd both speak English?
We speak English. Yeah. And just the other day he said, why, Mama, you know, why should I speak to you in Arabic when you and Papa are speaking in English?
How old is your little boy?
He's now four.
Because I have a sister whose little boy is 2 years and 4 months. So my sister speaks to him in English, and he spends the bulk of his time with his mum, his dad in Italian, and at nursery it's French. And she said the other evening, for the very first time, he went up to his mum with an empty bowl saying, Maman, encore.
Oh, no.
He's talking about food in French.
I won't disagree on that.
Yes, he's chosen well.
But his vocabulary is definitely weaker than other kids
of
his age.
They gain it. They gain it later.
So, yeah, there's time. There's time for it. Let's go on, move on to Cyril's story now, which is
the glamour
talking
of
about
Cannes.
Food and fashion and glamour.
I don't know
glamour.
If that glamorous. I mean, it looks like glamorous when you see, like 2 days ago, Brad Pitt on the red carpet. But I think as I mentioned earlier on, it's always interesting when you organize an event to look at the details of another event. And I found some very interesting facts and figures about that film festival was ending on Sunday. So it's all very shortly. It's about 12 days. It's about 87 films, and there are 22 films in competition. But it is said to be the largest film festival, or even one festival in the world, because it grew from 700 journalists in 1966 to about 4,600 this year.
Wow.
From 90 different countries. 400 photographs have been on site, and there are 26,000 accreditation made for this.
Gosh, I had no idea.
12 days, and there's 700 elite police staff being deployed on the croisette for the entire period of it, and it generates 3,500 jobs, and 30 of them are permanent for this entire administration.
Wow.
And it's funny because the city is kind of small. When you go to Cannes on a normal basis, it's about 73,000 inhabitants, but it's just tripled to 200,000 during the Cannes Film Festival.
Wow.
So it's massive. And the hotels are generating 15% of the income in 12 days. So that's pretty heavy for them. Yeah, I have some very interesting facts from hotels. So, for example, the Majestic in the Barrière Majestic is producing 20,000 macaroons, 2 tons of lobster,
2 tons of lobster,
exactly, 20 tons of vegetables. So that's very interesting. You have 16,000 soap bars being distributed in hotel rooms, 700 massage at the spa. We were talking about that earlier on. And then, if you want to look at the typical French specialities put in a bubble, it's about 15,000 of these being just for one hotel being used. So it's very interesting.
So they have fun then.
But who's eating all this stuff?
Because I mean, so who goes? I mean, who are guests of, like, who pays? Are they the rich and famous, or?
It's very funny because you're asking this. The first time this year, there was an agency asking to pay for an interview with Brad Pitt. If you wanted to have a 20-minute interview with Brad Pitt,
you have to pay for it.
You have to pay for it because they explained that they want to reimburse the cost of a private jet and, this royal suite. So
gosh.
I think it was like €20,000 for 20 minutes or something. I don't remember exactly the price, but it was big.
Mm.
But the most interesting thing for it is, France is very, very keen on subsidizing culture. We have this very heavy Ministry of Culture, although the budget has been reduced drastically for the last couple of years. But the Cannes Film Festival is about a €20 million budget, which is 100 million dirhams roughly, and half of it is paid by the public institutions like the Ministry of Culture, the City of Cannes. So if you do a very quick roundup, it means that each French citizen is paying €3 per person, which is 15 dirhams per person for the organization of the Cannes Film Festival. So this is where your tax money goes, actually. So
that's not much, is it?
It seems pretty cheap.
And the benefit of the money going back into the country.
It's an amazing image for the country. Yeah. I mean,
exactly.
It's one of the best in terms of organization. You really have the very up end of everything. It's a fantastic image for the country. Mm. Yes, it's true.
It's quite interesting. I was talking to a guy I know here who works in the sort of film industry, former film distribution industry, and there is this sort of very glamorous side of Cannes, and we see the pictures of the red carpet and those wonderful gowns and all the celebrities. But he works, as I said, in the business side, and he said it is a rabble. I mean, it is tough work.
Yes.
It's not glamorous at all.
Behind the scenes of everything.
That's what I mean.
And
I thought
that was a lot of hard work.
It just gave me a completely other view of what Cannes is and the business of film.
It is very rough because it's a very, very hard industry, and people are fighting very hard to get the exposure of the media. I mean, and then you were talking about the backside of it. I mean, it's about 200 to 250 tons of litter every day during that festival, which is collected by the city. So it's also important that the city is putting a lot of money because the infrastructure needs to follow.
Mm.
And that's really, really important for the entire country, because the film industry comes, and Cannes is also hosting in January another festival which is more oriented to the music industry. But all the film deals are normally made in Cannes, so it's very important for the business
as well. Are you thinking about next year's Design Days Dubai and lobster and
well, hopefully. I mean, the figures that we had this year will grow. It's always a good indication when catering companies are basically doing more business, because it shows that people are staying in the premises and they're enjoying the time.
But I think what's interesting, Cyril, and this is maybe, because often with the show, you know, we get to sort of do, ask the behind the scenes and see behind the scenes. But a lot of people perhaps don't realise that a lot of the events that are put on here, and they may be commercial events, but they also bring a massive revenue to the city of Dubai. Yeah. You know, the amount of people that come in and stay in the hotels, that use the airlines, that go eat in the restaurants, that, you know, that shop while they're here. I mean, and the benefit of these actual...
it's true.
Non-government supported, let's say, in many ways, the benefit to the actual Dubai that they are.
So just and I also to commend Cyril, because honestly, so many people in Dubai say, "Oh, there's no culture," and I really, there's a word here I can use in German.
Go on then.
Backpfeifengeist. A face badly in need of a fist. So honestly,
Backpfeifengesicht.
Okay, there you go. That's the word. I've lived in
there's
many,
a ton of stuff happening,
in many
absolutely.
Countries, and you know what? When I was in Barcelona, things were in Catalan. Yeah. When I was in Norway, it was in Norwegian. You know, give Dubai credit. It's in an international language. It's got amazing stuff. I can't keep up. I can't.
There's
I hardly
always
go
something.
To anything, to tell you the truth, because, you know, I've kids and all that, you know, just trying to survive every day. But every once in a while, things come in and I go and I just say thank you. You know, it's just, and from all over the world, it's so cultural. You know, so for people to keep saying this for about Dubai, I just think, go back to your village.
But helping the industry, I mean, I can give you a couple of examples here in Dubai during Design Days Dubai and Art Dubai. There was about 65 museum groups coming to the city from different parts of the world.
Really?
Even the National Museum of Peru came to this Art Week in Dubai. We had about 300 journalists coming for both Art Dubai and Design Days Dubai. So, and they all... indirect ambassadors after that of the city, because when you stay, it's great, and they all have a great stay. They come back home and say, "I had an amazing time in Dubai." Mm-hmm. So you know, you trust more the person who says that to you than someone who's basically
been there and experienced it, reading
in a newspaper, because it's maybe paid or it's an advertorial. You never know.